And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 614. The Return of the King is here to discuss some MLB hot stove because I've been doing other shows and stuff. So we have literally all the info since the beginning of November to discuss. If we want some, will obviously be kind of just cliff notes. There are some more impactful ones. Winter meetings are taking place as we record here on Tuesday. And so hopefully there'll be a lot more to talk about as the week goes on, as there's quote unquote rumors everywhere. But to help me break that down, like I said, is one of my kind of co-hosts during the regular season to recap, Fab, probably back this year unless something crazy happens. You know, his philosophy on content changes all the time. He is now going to be doing MLBPlayingTime.com, which is supposed to be released in January or February. But for those keeping track at home, was released on Monday, December 4th. So that says a lot about the individual that I love and call a friend over here. You can find him on Twitter at @Mike_Curland. Mike Curland, how are we doing, my friend?
I feel attacked.
If it makes you feel any better, I've been thinking about how to open this show since yesterday when you opened your website.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I wanted to write about all the rumors, not so much the rumors, but like, hey, Jonathan India is going to first base. How does that affect the whole team? And I find that interesting, so I want to write about it. And then I wrote something. I was like, by the time I release the site, this is useless information. And then the Mets thing, hey, they're not going to go, and according to the president of operations, the Mets aren't going to go look for a third baseman. Cool, let's look at their options internally. We kind of know them, but let's break it down, see what they produced last year, et cetera, et cetera. And I find this information just personally very interesting, and I wanted to put it. And that's the type of stuff I want to be able to do in the offseason is react to these. Again, those are rumors, I guess, but those have more validity to them than, hey, where Ohtani might have washed his dog last Wednesday. Who knows? And that's what we're hearing. You know, so I'm sick of that. So I wanted to put out something that's actually, for me, interesting. Because, again, this whole thing, and I will talk about, we talk about why I'm even doing the site if anybody cares. But it's MLBPlayingTime.com because obviously it's my niche. GTE, no mas. So we went our separate ways. Respectfully, no animosity. Obviously, we're still working together here doing this, but
we still have a chat that we talk all the time.
It's one of those things where it's I still wanted to do this, but because I am scaling back, I know the idea of running a website isn't scaling back, but it really is more like a personal blog. So it kind of is scaling back. And I'm going to be doing, you were there. You saw I was doing like 4 or 5 write-ups a week on all 30 teams. Not only was it redundant in a sense, it was just so much. And I'm gonna scale way back, and because I'm scaling so far back, especially on the in-season stuff, I couldn't justify charging people the same price when I'm planning on doing so much less. So I decided to create my own little thing just because I enjoy content. And I understand as a player in high stakes these days, doing this doesn't benefit me. I've had people tell me like, hey, you're helping people potentially beat you. And I'm like, I get that. And you know me, I've told you my struggles being in it. Now that I've entered the high stakes realm and I really want to compete, being overly open with my thought processes not so much with thought processes or strategy, but players I'm in on. So that's why I decided to start something. I can still talk about playing time, be not biased, and no one has any idea who I like or don't like just because I'm still going to put out very useful information, but in a different way, not so much like, hey, these are my guys. I'm not planting my flag. You'll know the day before opening day when I post my percentages who I'm in on. Other than Glasnow, I've been very obviously open about being in on Glasnow, but
it's okay, folks. I'll poke the bear and try to get as much information out of him as possible.
I'll still give it.
I know. I'm just kidding.
It's just not going to be as willing at all. It's one of those things where I'm trying to keep a little bit of stuff close to the chest, but I'm still pretty much open book. I'm not going to be like Justin Mason, who has no problem telling you everything, and I respect that. I thought I'd never get to this. I feel kind of crappy being this way, but when I'm putting thousands of dollars of my money on the line now, so why I don't, and because I'm not getting paid for my content, that was a big thing. I'm not getting paid. I'm not obligated to share every little thing about what I'm into in terms of fantasy baseball.
That's fine. You do you, boo. Again, you can find him on Twitter. I'm at BDintric. I have a Substack going as well, so go check that out. It's all free.
Oh, free. Yes. It's full all free. Circle, Bubba. Full circle.
People are donating money, which is cool and appreciated, but it's all free. So
yeah, I'm going to. I'm gonna put a link for donations for people who want to, just because the startup costs for me are gonna be roughly $600 total for the whole year. So if I can just even break even on donations, that'd be fantastic. But I haven't even asked for any. I'm not gonna ask. I'm just gonna put a link either.
It's just a link on the site.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
amazingly generous to do. Substack puts the link there without even me doing.
I'm gonna create a link. I have to. But like I said, it's one of those things where I'm putting my own money into it. I don't care. It's a hobby. I enjoy this. But anyway, enough about that. People came for con. I guess it's off season. We have time to ramble for once, right?
Am I sounding okay again? My mic got unplugged for a second.
Oh, you sound good to me. My mic wasn't even connected. You didn't tell me. I just happened to catch it right before we started. It was camera audio. Well, now it is, but it was my camera audio the first time before.
All right. So this is fun technical stuff, as you people understand. It's what we do here. But let's talk some hot stove goodies here, because I know we'll go down rabbit holes as usual, as we do on and off the air. And Curlin will bring his twist to it. But yeah, like he mentioned, like I'm with him, the India stuff, like it's just a rumor, but if you can beat the rumor mill on these kind of things, that's like Mookie Betts full-time second baseman next year. Well, that kind of makes things that we'll talk about Jason Hayward later and some other things that take place in LA. So let's kind of go. Instead of going in like chronological order, I kind of grouped them by the teams that maybe benefited from the deals, I guess. I don't know, but eventually majority of the deals will be talked about on this show. So we're starting with the Atlanta Braves because they've been super active. It's almost like Jerry DePoto was in Atlanta for a while, and now he's back in Seattle. It's a weird dynamic. But the Braves have been active by just gutting the 40-man roster because maybe they have an idea of spending money this year because they have tons of it. But we'll start with the first trade they made. They traded Kyle Wright and his bum shoulder to the Kansas City Royals for Jackson Coar, who will be traded again soon. So we'll talk about him. But I guess we'll start with this. Wright's essentially out for the year, unless I missed something. So this is kind of just a wash trade, right?
Yeah, Wright's out for the year. So,
we're good there. But I'm just highlighting these things, especially the Jackson Coar part, because he will be back. The next move. This was one that stood out as the total let's clear up space. The White Sox move with the Braves. The Braves traded Mike Soroka, who supposedly is going to be good to go to start the season. Jared Schuster, Nicky Lopez, Braden Shumaki, who was at one point almost the starting shortstop last year for the Braves, and Riley Goins to the White Sox for Aaron Bummer. Do any of those Braves players going to Chicago who are desperate for any pulse, pretty much, does any of them stand out to you as potential fantasy viable players?
Only really the deepest of formats. The name that came to mind for me was Brandon Schumacher. I thought it was Schumacher. If it's Schumacher,
maybe it is. Like, you know me in pronunciation. I think I just have fun with it, so I'm going to say Schumacher. And if someone has a problem with it,
and the only reason why I think he might be fantasy viable is because obviously I don't believe in DeJong really working out or Nicky Lopez, and that leaves guys like what's his face? There's a few names here, actually. Unfortunately, it's kind of crowded with mediocrity, and Schumacher is known for his glove. Last I checked, I haven't looked into him in a little bit of time, but so if Schumacher's known for his glove, and obviously they seem to be interested in glove-first players if they're going after DeJong and Lopez, maybe Schumacher gets that first shot instead of a, what's his face, Montgomery? That everyone's
hyped up. Montgomery.
So this might hurt
him.
Hoping
they're hoping these guys are just like kind of stepping stones for Colson.
And I think Colson gets up this year, but I think everyone expects him to be up sooner than later. He's going to be 22 at the start of the year. The White Sox have nothing to play for. And these days, I feel like the big question mark is if you're not starting them up with the team to go for that rookie of the year, you know, the extra comp pick, then they're probably just going to play service time games. I don't think there's any in between. You know, like what do you gain from bringing a guy up early if you're not going to bring him up right away? Like, unless you really think he can still make a push. So it's one of those things where we haven't really seen the White Sox have rookies of late. I feel like guys like Lenin Sosa, and like there was hype around those guys last year, and they barely came up. And when they did, it was for injury replacements and other stuff. It was wild. So I think that Schumacher probably, and he's on the 40 man for what it's worth. Again, I know the 40 man isn't what it used to be. Like, they make room for guys like Colson Montgomery, but Schumacher being on the 40 man, Montgomery not. That's another path of like resistance, possibly. So maybe they want to, maybe they'll give him runs. So I think DeJong and Lopez, between injury or failure, won't last very long. And Schumacher is the only name of like that really came to mind of like potential upside. I guess Schuster. I mean, obviously,
Schuster. Schuster's the guy that
I was thinking hitting, you know,
in a deep, deep format. Schuster, like, it wasn't great for Jared Schuster last year. Obviously, there's like coming out of spring training, there's high expectations for Schuster and Smith Shaver. And none of them really like found their full go, but You know, in 52 innings, he made 11 starts, ERA of 5.81, not ideal, of course, in 79 minor league innings, 5.01 ERA. But, you know, previous regimes were pretty solid. So the dude's only 25 next year, or this 2024 season. And they really have no reason not to give him run unless it's completely horrific. That's the thing. So, like, am I running to draft him? No, but if we're doing a 50-team DC potentially,
he's innings. He's innings at the end.
You wouldn't be shocked if he's just hanging out. Like, I'm going to pull up, you know, I should have had these up already. But if you're looking at draft champions drafts so far this season, a guy like Schuster has an ADP of 7.11. So, really not costing you much
anything. So it's almost like the store where you just kind of go there for convenience, but you don't really need anything.
Yes, pretty much.
The ADP matches the player.
Great point right there. So, yeah, that's kind of how I look at it. Soroka is a broken man. I need to see a lot before I
get back to that situation. But it's kind of the same concept, though. Like, I feel like he's a poor man's Kyle Gibson type. You know what I mean? Like, you'll get innings. And that's sad because poor man Kyle Gibson is poor man's poor man usually.
Yeah.
But like
Soroka's got a 6.25 ADP.
Yeah.
So,
and I get it. Again, if you're talking about draft champions formats, which again, I know you reiterate this over and over again, but it's a 15 team draft and hold basis. So 15 teams, 50 rounds, you draft them. That's all you have for the year. No waivers, no trades. And it's what, 750 players drafted?
Yes.
So there you go. I know you reiterated a ton, but I figured I'd hit up on that because I want to emphasize just how deep of leagues we are talking about these guys in.
And weirdly enough, between the two, I'd probably go Schuster just because he threw like 130 innings last year between the minors and the bigs. Mm-hmm. Soroka 32. And those are his first innings in like 3 years.
And he didn't look good
at all. No. So that's a weird dynamic. We spent probably way too much time on these players. bummer if you're in the deepest formats, he could get run into a few saves with the Braves, but nothing crazy there. I'll just jump to it. You mentioned Paul DeJong on the White Sox. Pretty much the only main thing I have there. I'm with you. I just want to clarify. Like, he's basically just a holding spot for Colson Montgomery. But the part I wanted to mention, I highlight what you said, is, you know, I like the idea of taking chances on Colson Montgomery, but only in draft and hold formats. 12 and 15 is fine. I wouldn't do it in a redraft just yet because I do believe it's going to be – he could start the year with the team. That's not out of the realm of possibilities. I'd be extremely shocked if he started the team. I expect it to be at least a 2 to 3 month situation before we see Colson Montgomery because the White Sox are crying poor and they suck. So they have no reason to bring him up. Do you have anything else on the DeJong signing, which we really haven't highlighted yet?
Well, that was kind of it. Like, he's a placeholder, and I think it goes back to Montgomery only getting 167 plate appearances in Double A, so he hasn't even touched Triple A. You can argue he needs more seasoning and all that good stuff too. So, and you mentioned it, they're in no rush. They're not competing this year. They're doing the whole fill gap thing with some terrible players. That's why I think Schumach might actually be the most relevant shortstop on this team this year, just because at least Schumach has some redeeming qualities. Again, if the glove is good, I think he runs a little bit, which was the thing about Schumach. And I know we kind of passed over him, but he's had 27 stolen bases last year in the minors and 16 home runs. And the power isn't really his thing. Only a 173 ISO matches a career high for him in the minors. So it's one of those things where he's not enough. Like, he can be viable. Like, if you're taking, like, he's probably going, where did you say he was going? 7-11? No, he's not.
Schuster was 7-11. You wanted Schumacher?
Schumacher's not even being drafted, since November 1. Since 11-1, he hasn't been drafted.
Yeah.
But if you want a guy like a 50th round, like, hey, this guy could get playing time. Like, I need plate appearances. I need a shortstop. I think Schumacher ends up in as a starter sooner than later, given DeJong's unlikely, just performance. I don't know, I'm not expecting much from him, I guess. I'm not excited, but again, we're talking about turning over every stone and this name. Watch, I'm telling you, there's gonna be a time where, like, hey, you need speed, go get this guy off the waiver wire type in 15s or something. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure. Let's talk Ronaldo Lopez. This is one that is a very intriguing one for the fact that he's turned into quite a reliever. We know this very, very well. But the Braves have come out and said they want to, like, stretch him out to potentially be a starter, which was interesting to me because we haven't really seen that since 2019 with the White Sox, and he had some very up-and-down seasons as a starter. He's really settled in as a reliever over the past 3 years, racking up wins, occasional saves, good ratios, the whole shebang. But I guess the biggest thing is, like, you look at the Braves staff, it's Strider, it's Fried. Morton is still up in the air. He hasn't completely accepted the option yet. He still might retire. You have Bryce Elder. They just traded for Marco Gonzalez, who we'll talk about soon, who's already been mentioned as getting dealt. Like, he's not even sticking around. So there's holes in the rotation. So the Ronaldo thing makes sense in that regard. But at the same point, does it? How does that affect his fantasy value to you is what I'm trying to say. He has an ADP of 511.
And that's – it's a Braves pitcher. You know, just like last year, you mentioned Schuster. You mentioned insert – I'm trying Smith to remember who else. Smith Schauber thing either. Oh, he wasn't drafted, I don't think. I'm trying to think who the other one was. I wonder if it's I'm scrolling down their page right now. Was it Dodd maybe? No.
Yeah, Dylan Dodd. Dodd versus Schuster in spring training. It was like, who would make the final spot?
And both – so those guys were getting pushed up, and that goes – and that's what I'm getting at was I think it's rightfully so. You're chasing the team context. I think Reynaldo Lopez, if you're getting five and dive out of him, I still think he has value there. I just don't – I think where he's going is fair. 500, pick 500 and later, you're taking a shot on a guy that – I think the best days are behind him as a starter, and even in a multi-inning role, he could be very useful for because if he's pitching the multi-innings, high leverage multi-innings could be like he could fall into a Matt Brash type of win upside. You know, not necessarily. I wouldn't say he'd get the strikeouts or the ratios, but maybe he gets maybe sneaks you some wins. A guy is useful in the deepest of formats, but again, it's a deep cut there. And I was just looking, and over the last 2 years, Lopez has pitched two innings. Over the last 2 years, he's pitched two innings maybe seven times, eight times.
That's what I'm concerned total. About.
Like two innings in an outing. Like it's been one inning outings or less in all but like seven or eight. I'm trying to do a quick math and just count as I go through all the 2022 and 2023's appearances, but that's really difficult on the fly. So, yeah, like I said, roughly 10 or less, he's gone two innings. And other than that, it's been one less than two innings. So,
yeah, because he totally changed his pitch mix up to become a reliever, get a starter. So it's just a whole different dynamic. That's why I'm curious on what comes of this. If he could somehow bring that pitch mix into like a five inning starter, awesome. That's just not always easy to do, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Last bit of news here for the Braves. This is the big one that just took place a couple days ago. The aforementioned Jackson Coar and prospect Cole Phillips were traded to the Mariners. So another dump for Jared Kelenic, Marco Gonzalez and Evan White. I just mentioned Marco Gonzalez. There are already rumors that he is going to be in a package to go somewhere else. Like I believe it was the GM or someone from the Braves said, do not expect Marco Gonzalez on the team come opening day is what it came down to. So he's pretty much already gone. Evan White's costing $7 to $8 million a year the next 2 years because he signed one of those early contracts, yet he hasn't played in the bigs in over a year. So I could see that one disappearing at some point in time. So Jared Kelenic, let's talk about him, Mr. Kurland.
I don't know what to think. Kelenic has the tools. We know he can steal bases. He can hit home runs. He barrels the ball well, hits the ball hard. Last year was a career high hard hit rate for Kelenic, 45.5%. His barrel rate was 9.5%. Was actually lowest of his career, but still 9.5% is pretty solid. I obviously 10% above is kind of like the good barrel rates, I would say. But yeah, all things considered, 9.5 is fine. And so I trust Kelenic to still be that guy who could hit the ball hard, hit home runs, steal bases. But I think where his value comes is going to be as a right fielder for them, because obviously they're going from Eddie Rosario and Ozuna and insert crappy like plug. And well, isn't Acuna right fielder though? That's kind of the problem.
Yeah.
So Kelenic graded out best in right field. That's I was looking at his defensive metrics, and he had graded out best in right field. In left field, he was a -1 outs above average instead of the two that he is in right field. So I'm not sure how much of a difference that's going to play if they move. I doubt they move Acuna over, but still, I bet you if I go look at Rosario right now, I bet you it's like -5 because Rosario is just known to be a piss poor defender. And I think Kelenic can at least be trained up to be a better defender and improve. If he could be that good in right field, he'd probably turn around and be that good in left field. So at the end of the day, I think the defensive upgrade is there. I think the problem is Vaughn Grissom. We know he's a major league hitter, but the glove hasn't found a home, and I don't know if they're going to trade him. So I think Vaughn Grissom takes the biggest hit because Vaughn Grissom went from having a spot, a chance for everyday playing time to more of probably the weak side platoon and filler at infield spots as players need rest. One thing we did see with this team though, with the Braves last year, outside of Rosario, they didn't platoon anybody. Rosario was platooning, and everybody else played like as many games as they can handle. I don't know if you like pretty much Acuna, Albies, Riley, Olsen. Those guys are not going to have a lineup. Even Ozuna, as long as he's hitting, is going to be hitting every day. Arcia plays every day when he's healthy. So, and just because I'm curious, I had to look it up. So, left field last year. Oh my goodness. Last year, Rosario was a better left fielder than Kelenic, but I still don't buy that. Like I still think he's going to be just fine. I think Kelnick's going to be just fine as a fielder, but regardless, I think it was a smart move from the Braves to take advantage of a talent they know is there, see if they can turn the most out of him. But don't know if the glove plays up. I think he'll play a little more against lefties than a strict platoon, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think he still plays okay. I know Chris Clegg posted his lefty righty splits last year, and he actually was better versus left hand pitch than a righty pitch, which was pretty impressive for Kelenic. That was a big hole for him early on. But it is the Braves. It's what they love to do outside of obviously, you know, splitting time with their catchers. They do like that one outfield spot to kind of rotate things around. That's their jam. Like you mentioned, Harrison Acuña ain't going nowhere. So they leave one spot for the whole thing. And I think Kelenic's going to be I wouldn't be shocked if he plays every day, but at the same time, it's tough to see it in Atlanta. Well,
was Kelenic, were those the splits from the minors? I'm only asking because I'm looking at his splits right now. And
well, let me see what Clegg posted.
Because I'm going to call out Clegg. I'm being wrong there, or you. One of you guys are getting called back.
I'm just going to repeat what I saw. I was trying to give credit where credit's due.
So versus lefties, 26.9% K rate compared to 23.32% K rate for Kelenic against righties. Against lefties, a 703 OPS versus a 762 OPS, which is lefty being the lower one there. WRC plus of 90 against lefties, 101 against righties. And only 67 plate appearances, so it's not even a sample size at this point, honestly. It's not really fair.
Jared Kelenic was much better against lefties last year than previously in his career. Versus right-handed pitchers, he had 251, 334 weight slash, 32.5% K rate, 65% contact. Versus lefties, he hit 259, 315, 459 with 29.3% K rate and a 72% contact rate.
So Kelenic in 2021 against lefties actually wasn't terrible. Hit 265. OPS was worse. But yeah, one of those things where you can't judge. But the problem is these sample sizes are all too small. 120 in 2021, 2022, 33, 2023, 67. Oh, I'm looking. You know what? I'm an idiot. I was looking at Eddie Rosario. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you are an idiot that we've established that before.
I'm so annoyed by that. I forgot. I remember I switched over to him, and I'm going to look at the split. So, yeah,
let's see. Kelenic has improved.
Yeah, okay. Last year, he technically had better batting average against lefties. I was going to say.
And his contact rate was better. And his strikeout rate was better.
And the OPS was, yeah, he still struck out a ton. What
but
the heck?
Less than right.
Hey, Clegg, I'm sorry for listening, buddy. I'm sorry for listeners. I'm sorry for all listeners who had to put up with like a 2-minute rant on how you guys were wrong and how I was
you're
right.
You're welcome, Clegg. I got you.
I was just looking at this. I was looking at the wrong player because I forgot. So why? You know why?
This is what
who
you
looks
do.
Up. Who's looking up Eddie Rosario? Who the hell looks up Eddie Rosario on the fly? This guy does.
Only you.
So at the end of the day, he did hit lefties better last year, but I still think it's a small sample. I'm going to go back. I'm still pretty sure it's a small sample. Yeah, it's still 92 plate appearances. So what are you going to take away from that, honestly?
Yeah, I'm with you there. And so,
59 the year before.
It could be the Von Grissom Kelenic platoon, like you mentioned, because that was kind of what they wanted to do with Von Grissom. So
just kind of partially, I was very wrong with the player, but I was still very right about the sample size. So I got something right, but damn, was that bad. Anyway,
Kelenic 223 ADP, Von Grissom 383 ADP.
Maybe I need to podcast more so I don't make these rookie mistakes.
We'll see how this goes. I'll keep writing the website. And this will transition us into the Mariners because they were a part of this past trade. And so we'll start with that one. We already mentioned Jared Kelenic. With Kelenic, Marco Gonzalez, who really cares about Evan White because he's a minor leaguer, but with Kelenic and Gonzalez leaving, I should say, how do you think that opens things up in Seattle for now as they are shopping around for potentially a Rosarena? They're rumored in a bunch of trades. That's what DePoto does. They have money to spend, but now DePoto is saying they might not be spending a lot of money. So how do you think this opens up the situation? Because, you know, there was a big-time outfielder that got traded from Arizona last year that you were a big fan of that went to Seattle.
Dominic Canzone, baby. But there's another one there, too, and Cade Marlow that I was in on. Yep. And I couldn't, and he just wasn't getting the run. And he has like the tools and the skill set, but wasn't getting it. I think those two and Taylor Trammell, I think all three of them obviously get full run right now. And this was a team, the Mariners were actually pretty open to platooning. And I just named three lefties. So Trammell, Canzone, and Marlow.
That's the tough part. They're all
lefties. I don't think Marlow's been drafted in a DC, but I think that will change because he hasn't been drafted since November. No, I'm looking at November 1 DC stuff. So. But yeah, Marlow,
he's drafted in 2 DC since they started in November.
Well, I'm looking at DC ADP. Oh, that's weird.
Maybe it's 746 ADP.
He didn't come up on the search for me. All right, whatever. I believe you. Because obviously I don't know what I'm doing today. So I'm just going to just defer to you being
there. I have draft champions. I have from October 1st.
Oh, see, different. So, yeah, so it's funny. So after this, I'm sure he will be drafted. But when you look at the numbers, like, they weren't so great in the major league level last year. But it's one of those things where in the minors, he did it again, 11 home runs with 29 stolen bases. The year before that, 20 home runs, 36 stolen bases. Decent plate approach. He's very patient, walks a ton. So Cade Marlowe's a guy that has potential to be a decent major league fantasy asset. He only hit .239 last year with a .346 BABIP, so obviously that's not encouraging. But he's still all in all 112 WRC plus, very small sample, 100 play appearances. So again, can't take much away from it. But I don't think the metrics we got at the major league level don't support the production we saw from him while he was producing. But at the end of the day, we're talking about a guy who's not being drafted in most leagues that should at least get your attention that far in. Of course, Dominic Canzone is the one of the bigger winners here. I think he always kind of had a spot. They got rid of Mike Ford so that Canzone shouldn't have issues with at least DHing. And Canzone, although it's weird, he walks a lot more in the minors. Last year, he didn't really walk a whole lot at the major league level. And we know there's a little bit of pop there, a little bit of speed. Not speed, sorry, a little bit of pop there, though. The speed is, it wouldn't really depend on it. But 12.1% barrel rate. Hits the ball 42.6% hard hit rate. Max EV of almost 112, 111.6. Anything over 110 is pretty good. So Canzone, a guy that I think probably the biggest riser of all these names, probably the one that's going to get the most hype. But I like Marlowe, and Trammell isn't. And we've seen flashes in the past. As long as there's, and again, we're looking at playing time here. We're looking at guys that should gain. And yeah, that's weird. So maybe you've heard these two, because I've seen Mariners fans complaining about how the Mariners aren't planning on spending. Like, they're actually thinking about possibly selling. Like, Logan Gilbert could be on the move because they can't afford to pay him. And I think there was another name I saw mentioned possibly being moved.
They're saying Logan Gilbert possibly next year.
I've seen rumors, and I'm like, dude, this team doesn't really have much of a payroll.
Yeah, they don't want to spend, but they're willing to trade. Like, they're rumored for Rosarena, but they don't want to spend cash. That's why, yeah. So the Mariners fans aren't happy. But
why go out and trade half the farm, like some of your better names, for Castillo and stuff like that? Like,
I agree. I never count DePoto out. He could be playing poker right now, for all we know. Like, this is, we'll wait and see. His team's so close to being so good, it's tough to watch it go away. But back to what you're saying here, Marlowe, yeah, picking in two of the 23 drafts, ADP of 711. Very, like, if you believe Roster Resource, we were talking about this before the show, like, they do a great job of highlighting situations, but not this time of year, kind of locking in playing time correctly. But they have Marlowe in left field, they have Canzone in right field platooning, they have Trammell DHing platooning. So basically, the moral of the story is they believe all three of them are involved somewhere in the thing, like Kerlin was saying. And you can get Canzone at a 523 ADP. Trammell had 21 homers and 17 steals in AAA last year, and then had a small cup of coffee in the bigs. And he was a big time prospect in that. I think he came with Castillo or a different deal. He was a big time prospect at one point in time. So there are tools there. These are the kind of guys that are good to speculate on later in DCs, 100%, because you wouldn't be surprised if any of the three ran with a job, because they all have the skill set to do it, and they all bring some power and some speed to the table in a lineup that was pretty good last year that obviously have to fill some holes that are gone. But at the same time, these could be the guys filling the holes. So it's definitely an angle to look at for sure.
And sorry, real quick, just to highlight for what it's worth, defense might matter. And this is where I go back into looking at the defense. And the only one that graded out negatively defensively of the three, Trammell, Canzone, and Marlowe, was Canzone. That's why I think Canzone can fit more into that DH. And obviously, well, right now it's just, they're showing Trammell DH, but just flip-flop them. But my point is, if you're stuck DHing more and being that fourth outfield type, that might hinder, you know, because if you're playing small ball in terms of paying people, you probably want good defense out there, right? Like, you probably want to get your pitchers the most defense they can get, because you want to avoid runs. And Trammell and Marlowe would probably be more secure for playing time if they value the defense more. Assuming that, again, but Canzone could improve. I'm not going to say he's not. It's just one of those things where defense could be the difference maker in terms of who gets the more steady playing time or who isn't platooning because you can only platoon so many players, et cetera. So.
Yep, it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. But there are definitely some good names to put on the list later in your draft and hold formats. Now, with Marco Gonzalez leaving town, and everyone likes to clown on Marco, and I get it. It's Marco Gonzalez, for crying out loud. But at the same time, like, late in DCs, he was always a guy like a poor man's Quintana. Like, this last year, he didn't throw as many innings. Obviously, he got hurt 50 innings. But prior to that, he's had innings. He didn't blow up your ratios. But again, this past year, different story, of course. But with him leaving town, the reason I ask is he could have been like a reliable either long man or something, because you got Castillo, Gilbert, Kirby, which is great. Then you have Bryce Miller and Brian Wu, two good young arms, but two young arms that have shown durability issues. So do you think, looking at the Mariners, potentially there's another angle, like a sixth pitcher to look at in drafts? That's why I'm asking.
What's his face?
I didn't see anything off the top of my head.
Emerson Hancock.
Jackson Coar could be the guy, honestly, as weird as that sounds. Because he used to be a highly touted prospect. Maybe he just needs a chance. Who knows?
I'm not excited, but we saw Hancock debut last year, injury shortened. I remember blowing a little more fab on him than I wanted to, but I wanted to take a shot on upside because he was I remember him being a decent prospect. I mean, he was a former
time prospect.
Yeah, former number six overall pick. Yep. So Hancock, and we've seen obviously the Mariners develop pitching relatively well. I mean, you have Gilbert, you have Kirby, Miller, Bryce Miller. So Hancock. Farm. I think Hancock would be the name of the spare pieces to probably know in case there's a rotation opening, assuming he's healthy. But even then, he didn't really show us any skill that like stood out. You know what I mean? It was just one of those things where you're kind of betting on the team context, and it's a good ballpark and all that too. So, but Hancock, I think Emerson Hancock's probably one of the few. And like you said, Coar, as long as he's there, he's not getting shipped out again.
He's got a pulse on the Hancock call for sure. Just a matter of innings. This is where I think they could probably end up trading for like a veteran pitcher, or even signing like a Michael Walker.
When does Robbie Ray come back?
He got surgery at the beginning of the year, I'd imagine mid-season, give or take.
That's what I'm thinking. So I think it's one of those things where if they trade Gilbert or something, they would just probably limp their way to the Robbie Ray return.
Yeah.
Between, I think Hancock would be who they lean on, and then Coar, and then I don't know enough about their farm system to suggest anyone else, but they can just go sign a warm body. You know, maybe Bartolo Colon with his 80 mile per hour stuff in that league that they're playing in over there can come over. That'd be fun, actually. I would love that. I'd buy a jersey tomorrow.
All right, let's have some fun. I'm going to combine these two. Early in the offseason, the Mariners acquired Luis Urias from the Red Sox, utility guy, third baseman for the most part. Remember, with the Brewers to the Red Sox. Now here he comes to Seattle. And then a week or so later, the Mariners traded Eugenio Suarez to the Diamondbacks for Carlos Vargas and Sebi Zavala. Not too worried about the Vargas, could be a reliever type guy. Zavala, backup catcher, whatever. With Suarez leaving town, is Urias the guy for you at third base? Are there other options you're looking at? Is Urias even worth looking at type situation?
I've given up hope on him. I was in on Urias for a couple of seasons, and he would show flashes. We all know that. It was him and Arcia, and they were like, I remember, weren't they fighting out in Milwaukee at one point?
Yep.
And I really liked both of them at one point or another. Arcia took a step forward again finally last year, but Urias just hasn't. And at this point, I mean, maybe this team will give him full run finally. I just have a hard time being that interested because Urias hasn't put it together. He did okay in 2022, like 16 home runs. Yay.
It's almost a Eugenio Suarez profile minus like half the power.
That's the problem. Like, yeah, if you're not giving me batting average and you're giving me teens home runs, what are you doing for me? I know he struggles against righties too. So that's kind of like the thing, is that the struggles against the righties. Like, he hit 183 against them last year. What was the OPS? I can only imagine 614. Not that he hit much better against righties, but for his career, I think in general against righties, Urias has been a rather lackluster. 691 OPS against righties his whole career. So it's not somebody who's that fantasy viable, even full time at bats. We're talking again reserve rounds, just because he has a pulse. But even then, I'm looking for somebody else probably if I can.
Okay, what's your thoughts on Suarez going to the desert, to the D-backs, who basically, for me, just slots in for Longoria, and it's pretty much the same thing with maybe more power?
Yeah, I think we can see, you know, the playing time's there, and that's kind of the big deal. So you're kind of, he is who he is type of thing. I think he's just a linear value. We saw a step backwards in terms of the power production and metrics and stuff last year. So is age finally becoming a factor for Suarez maybe? I'm not all that interested in him at cost or in general this year, just because he's just such a guy, such a jag, you know, I don't know. Like if I miss out on all third base kind of falls off randomly. So if I miss out, maybe I'll land on him, but I haven't found myself falling that deep into the abyss and having to scoop him up as my starting third baseman. But at the end of the day, you know, you're getting power and probably some decent RBIs in that lineup. So
yeah, ADP of 282 right now. he's a dude, and I know I'm preferencing since October 1st, so that's because there's 23 drafts. So I'll start shrinking that down as they start pumping him out faster. But Suarez is a guy that I like as a backup third baseman in draft and holds because, like you said, you know the playing time's there. He can supply you some power. He might hurt you elsewhere, but at the worst, he's going to get you power and playing time, which if he runs hot, it's very, very productive. And it's hard to find that kind of depth at third base because you will need backups in those formats. So that's something I definitely like to take a peek at. Last thing I'll mention here, I don't think it has a huge impact, but with Urias leaving Boston, obviously Devers was playing third base. That wasn't the issue. Story's going to slot into shortstop. Second base is where I guess the question was because Urias was kind of helping there. You had Emmanuel Valdez. Bobby Dalbec played some second base last year. Maybe the answer is not there. I know like Cross wants India or someone to come over there. Are you interested in, does anybody else gain values? I guess is what I'm trying to say.
It's funny because I've obviously been pretty vocal in the past about being in on Emmanuel Valdez, and I think the bat can play, but the glove is just not that great. And I don't know how much they want to value that type of defense, so that would probably lean towards Pablo Reyes getting the playing time if they care about the defense. But I think from what I've read and stuff, it's pretty much an open competition for now. But, I mean, a guy like Emmanuel Valdez limits swing and miss, limits chasing, above average zone contact for Valdez. I love those types of skill sets, but unfortunately, he's a -4 out the ball replacement and a -6 DRS, which are defensive metrics. And it goes back to can this guy, like in his mid-20s, can he put in the effort and become a better fielder so that way he can get that batting lineup? Because a 10.7% barrel rate is great. I mean, hard hit rate's lackluster, but give me a guy who could barrel the ball, and if he pulls a decent amount and elevates it. I wish he'd elevate it a little more, but he has a history of elevating it a lot better than he did in his time at Major League. So maybe he gets comfortable with Major League pitching and Valdez can elevate the ball more, let the power play up. Regardless, though, that's kind of wish casting. I don't want to go that route. However, if they care about the bat, I think he gets in. Pablo Reyes being a 30-year-old guy, I don't know if they want him to be a starting second baseman for this team, but yeah, he can be. We saw him, you know, he can run a little bit.
His last year.
And he was relevant at times, too. I remember him being kind of relevant for a little bit and then kind of fell right back to obscurity. But going back to the defensive stuff, because apparently I have a hard-on for defense these days, it's just because it really matters in these things. You're talking about a guy, okay, so for reference, why it matters. You're talking about a guy that, so -4, I mentioned -4 and -6 for those numbers were for Valdez. Zero's like the average. The
average, yeah.
Reyes wasn't much better. He was a -2, -5. So it was still better, but I don't know if it's enough. I think it's one of those things where I really like to think Valdez can make up the difference there and be at least as good as Reyes defensively. Because I feel like I've heard the narrative of Reyes being a better defender. And then you look at the numbers and you're like, well, I guess he's technically better, but he's not good. There's a difference there between being better and good, right?
Yes,
so, but yeah, Dalbec is not happening. It's not a thing. Yeah.
I think they're still going to make a move. Like, India is a great fit there. I think there's a few other options that
the
Red Sox are trying to be. They got new people in the front office. I think they're going to try to make a push here and see where things go.
The problem is a team like the Reds need they need pitching, and they don't exactly have any here in Boston to trade. And I don't think many teams have pitching to trade. Maybe not a team like the Marlins, but the Marlins don't need another second baseman. They have like 15, even after losing Wendell, they still have like 15 second basemen in that roster. So it's one of those things where, yeah, I don't know. It makes sense, but unless they don't want, I don't know what type of pitching they'd be able to give up, and unless they're willing to move off the idea of getting pitching for India.
Maybe you get a Whitlock or a Tanner Houck.
Houck would be probably a dream for them at this point, given what the Reds are trying to do, but whatever, we'll see. Yeah.
Speaking of the Reds and needing pitching, let's talk about their two signings so far this offseason. They first started off with reliever Emilio Pagan, who there was times in Minnesota where we thought he was the next guy, and then that obviously kind of deteriorated after a bit. He's shown signs of being a pretty good setup, 7th and 8th inning guy, which is probably where he'll slide in here in Cincinnati for now. But any insight on a guy like Emilio Pagan, who is pretty much just a dart throw in the end games, if necessary, like a 718 ADP right now?
Yeah, Pagan becomes a guy that is more valuable if you have Alexis Diaz, and that's kind of what I would like. Almost like I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea of, hey, you got to handcuff your closer, but this is one of those rare situations where you look at this team and I think Pagan is clearly the next man up. It's not like one of those things where it's like, well, maybe it's this guy, maybe it's this guy. I think it's clearly Diaz, Pagan at the back end of that lineup. I could see Diaz maybe slotting into high leverage situations if they believe in Pagan you know, what happened last year that can carry over. So maybe there's maybe Diaz is still like the majority. Like I like Alexis Diaz. I have no problems taking him. I feel confident in him getting 25 to 30 saves. But maybe it's closer to 25 instead of 30 because Pagan, maybe they want Diaz in like the core lineup and then Pagan come clean up at the end. That's the only thing I can think of. Maybe something like that happens. But even then, I don't necessarily believe. And 25 to 30 is like low end for Diaz after we saw, what, 37, I think it was last year. So I'm kind of lowballing him there, probably, to be honest. But I really like Diaz. Whatever. But with that being said, yeah, Pagan's a guy that if you're looking, you know he's going to get innings. You know it's going to be high leverage innings. And we know the Reds are a team on the rise. It's not a bad back end of your DC pick just for an RP spec if you're chasing ratios, Ks, and maybe a few throw-in saves on occasion.
Yep, 100% agree with you there. He's got the long shot guy. I wouldn't be shocked if some point in the season, Curl and I are discussing on a Monday Fab recap, got picked up. That wouldn't Forgotten. Surprise.
But I'm picking it up for $2 because I'm chasing saves and he's been getting one every other week or something.
Yep, yeah. Wouldn't surprise me. That's a guy we're talking about at some point in time. Now, this name is intriguing. It would be more intriguing if it wasn't Great American Small Park where he'd call home. But this is Nick Martinez because one reason it's intriguing, ADP over 400, which is nice. But at the same time, it's a guy we've seen be really good out of the bullpen, have flashes in the rotation, a lot of back and forth with a guy like Nick Martinez. You know, maybe 9 starts last year, 10 starts, 18 starts since returning. He returned to the bigs in 2022 after being overseas for a while. Still hasn't gone more than 110 innings in a season. But in his last two seasons, you know, sub 3.5 ERA between the bullpen and the rotation. Decent strikeout stuff, but it's Great American Small Park. Other caveat, though, they're pretty much going to let him run, it looks like. Like, this is his, like, 150 innings is realm of possibilities. So what's your thoughts with Nick Martinez?
I'm curious to see what happens. I think, so as a starter last year, 42 innings, 42.2 compared to 67.2 as a reliever. And he performed better as a starter last year, actually, which, you know, again, usually is the opposite. You see guys kind of flash better numbers as a reliever because, you know, less innings, can throw harder, et cetera, et cetera. But as a starter last year, 42 or so innings. And the underlying metrics suggest that he got kind of lucky. So I believe the underlying metrics. And now you're taking those metrics and putting them in the smallest ballpark, or at least the hitter friendliest ballpark at this point. Yeah, I'm not really, outside of streaming on road games type of thing, I'm not really going to be in on him. He's going to be a guy that you'll see him, like you mentioned, Fab recaps. He'll be picked up. And maybe they have like a run of like a bunch of road games coming up. You'll sit there and look at his schedule, and he's scheduling out, okay, 3 out of 4 starts on the road. That's the type of guy you'll pick up just because, oh, he has 3 out of 4 starts on the road coming up. I can start him and kind of set and forget for a month, assuming that he's still decent. So that's the type of thing with Martinez that he's going to be very, very – it's almost like the Coors pitchers type of thing these days. I treat these guys almost like Coors pitchers where I'm like, I'm afraid to have these guys. Even though they have really good pitchers, I'm afraid of all of them with that home ballpark because we've seen that home ballpark.
Great American's been more offensive than Coors, so that makes
it's sense. Unforgiving. It's unforgiving with home runs, especially.
Let's go to the Brew Crew here, who have been active on the trade world and a couple other things as well. But they started off when we were I was in First Pitch Arizona, sitting there watching a panel. Me. I get an alert on my phone from Underdog Fantasy as I'm sitting next to Brendan Tuma from Underdog Fantasy. So I witnessed he does not run the account, which is interesting. Just kidding, Brendan. Mark Canha traded to the Detroit Tigers to open up some outfield stuff. And then they also traded Abraham Toro to the A's. So I'm going to package those. We can talk about those two players and their destinations in a minute. But with Canha leaving town, with Toro leaving town, I guess it kind of shores up a few things. We'll get into their signings here in a second. But Canha came over at the deadline, played a lot of first base with Rowdy Stinking / platooning, DH'd a bit. So that kind of opens that world up. And then you have Toro, who was just a utility dude. So any thoughts on how this plays out?
It's a pain. Toro's just gonna find playing time with the A's because it's the A's. The A's won't. I saw a report the A's. I know it's a side tangent, shocker, but I saw a report today the A's aren't looking to trade Seth Brown or Paul Blackburn. I'm like, what are the A's doing here? They're sabotaging their team because not only are they not trading away the few assets they have for young, they never do well. I think you even mentioned it on a podcast where it's like it's always quantity and it's crap quantity at that. It's like they are sabotaging this team. They don't even want their prospects to be good, so they don't have to pay arbitration prices, I feel like. Like, that's how bad this team is. So the A's are not – so it goes back to – sorry. So anyway, so that goes – the reason why I'm saying all that is because I think Toro gets playing time over a more deserving younger player because of that. Yep. Because because I swear it's like they hold everybody back. Anybody with a pulse who is interesting or exciting or could or should be given plenty of run on a team like that doesn't get it. Anyway, this team is just so loaded now with outfielders. I mean, Jake Bowers is going to play first base slash DH most likely, but you know he can play the outfield in the pinch. But then you have got you have what? You have Yelich. You have Tyrone Taylor. Yeah, you have Chirio, which we'll, again you'll mention Tyrone Taylor and Garrett Mitchell, and that's that's four players for three spots, not including. And that's I feel like there were, I thought there was another one I saw. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I'm mistaken. Either way, you have all these players. Like, are we really doing this right now? Is I don't know. It's kind of like I don't know. It's such a tight, crowded situation. I don't really know what to think here with this team. I'm still trying. I know you know Yelich is definitely sticking. That's definitely
Chirio sticking now.
Chirio, you got to think because they're paying Chirio probably the second most of all these outfielders. Oh, Weimer, Joey Weimer was the other name.
Yeah, he's in the minors. You got Tal Frelick. You have Garrett Mitchell. There's a lot of moving parts there.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. So that you got to think this team's definitely trade. It's like them and the Cardinals are trading outfielders. And there's a lot of teams that need outfield help. So we'll see what happens. I think the problem is teams that need that have offense like this are usually trying to trade for pitching. And I think it's one of those things where the demand and the demand is there for the there's not as much demand for hitting as there is for pitching across the league.
You could see those outfielders getting packaged in a Corbin Burns deal. It was like a throw on. That's where that's going to go.
Maybe, and that's how you get the most return. Like, okay, you'll get Burns because Burns is, you know, short-term thing. And then you're going to get, here's a guy who has like 8 years of fucking, Oh, God. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's just so crowded. And I loved Garrett Mitchell coming into the draft, like early draft season. I think I drafted him on my first team. Like, oh, I got to get Garrett Mitchell. And now it's like, I got to stay with him, Garrett Mitchell. Like, I think he's going to end up with playing time, maybe not for this team, but I don't know, man. There's just so many moving parts. It's frustrating because there's some really good, talented players here, and it's hard to tell which ones are going to get that playing time with the current outlook of this roster.
Yep, 100% agree. Now, the Mark Canha situation is a little bit more interesting to me just because he's been really good versus lefties in his career, especially of late. He's been just a serviceable guy we've seen in recent years. Like, if people were to go look at his stat line, they'd be probably like, whoa, he actually was not bad, all things considered. And his ADP is 454, so he's not costing a lot. Now, he's going to Detroit, where he's like the elder statesman there, almost 35 years old. But it's still a team that needs veteran leadership and needs guys to carry down positions. You know, Kerry Carpenter's good. We like him, obviously. Riley Green should be healthy. You got some other options there. But for now, they got Canha penciled in the outfield. He could obviously DH as well. Akil Badu, maybe platoon situation. Who knows? But how do you see the Canha situation playing out?
Yeah. I don't know what Detroit's doing. I guess I'm trying to load their page right now, see if I can just get a fuller look of everything. I heard you, but it's one of those things where I got to see it. So we got Carpenter, Green, Meadows. Yeah, so Canha, I think Canha's going to be that outfield slash first base help, like NDH. I think it's all going to work itself out. I think Canha's firmly in there right now with the current state of this outfield. Unless they really want to get Badu, maybe they can honestly platoon Badu in him. But Badu hasn't really done much since that rookie year. That and it wasn't even the whole rookie year. It was like part of the rookie year. Canha, I think it's almost like what they brought in. I'm trying to remember. Maybe I'm mistaken. I'm thinking of a name. But I feel, you know what? I'm thinking Matt Vierling. I think it feels very Matt Vierling-ish, where it's like this guy is going to come in, play often, and he'll be good, not great, and useful in deepest of formats because he's going to play. But Kana's even like, I don't have any interest. I think he's just going to find his way into playing time initially. And if he doesn't, and if Canha slows down or doesn't cut it, he'll end up being on a weak side platoon guy, probably more than likely.
That sounds like an interesting pick at 750, to say the least.
Oh, he's going to play. So yeah,
that's
I think a lot
of that pass at 450.
He's worth a draft pick in the reserve rounds of a DC. Absolutely. It's one of those things where it's like, there's just no excitement there. This team, it's the Tigers. And then now you add you take him from a good ballpark to a terrible one. That's not doing anyone any favors. And yeah, his splits are notable these days against lefties and righties. He's serviceable against righties, but he hit lefties really well last year in comparison. So again, if there's any slowdown in that production, we can see him get stuck into a weak side platoon.
Yep, no doubt about it. Now the one we've kind of hinted at, it finally happened, I believe on Monday, actually yesterday, as we record on Tuesday, Jackson Chirio. The big-time prospect for the Milwaukee Brewers, the gentleman that's not even 20 years old yet. He has not played. He played six games in AAA last season. He got paid, let's put it that way. And I'm happy for him because he's going to get like $80 million guaranteed, and he'll be, I believe, 27 when the deal's up, and he can really cash in if he wants to. Like, there's a lot of money coming his way. But we're not here to talk finances. We're here to talk about position. His ADP is 212 in November. He's gone as high as 155. Those have been the recent drafts since the news dropped, basically. So people are very pumped on him. He's going to be the everyday outfielder, power speed machine. In double A last year, 22 homers, 43 steals, hit 280. But again, young, never, not one at bat in the major leagues. What's your thoughts on Trio, especially at that current ADP?
Yeah, I don't. He's already moving up. That's the thing. Like, if you
in my 155 is the high.
And in a draft I was in, I think he went around the same range, maybe a little lower. And I think that's probably appropriate. I like the idea of Trio. I just don't know if this year is the year. I think everyone's gonna say that. He's gonna be 20. I'm trying to see his max. I can't be right. Oh, that's his MLB max EV. It's not showing his double A. I was just looking at his, because I have some stats. I was just looking at some stats. His max EV it's not registering on this leaderboard I'm looking at, because double A doesn't have Statcast. Never mind. I was just curious to see the power metrics, because I know the powers, I think it'll come. I think he'll mature into some power. I just don't think the power will be there necessarily day one. Yeah. So it's one of those things where the stolen bases are definitely a thing. Shurio's going to definitely steal bases. I think he's going to start off at the bottom of the order and need to work his way up. Very doable, but you got to, think about the fact that he's going to lose some play appearances to start the year, which are going to hurt counting stats. At the end of the day, I'm okay with it. I guess I won't have a lot of shares at that cost, honestly. I just won't at least what I think the new cost is going to be, but I can see taking a shot. I think it's also league dependent. If I'm in a shallower league, I like upside. I'll take a share or two in a deeper format, which is why I play. I don't see myself diving in there just because of the talent that's going to be going around the 150, 175 range. I think that there's talent of similar potential, or maybe not similar potential, but I feel like a lot safer and more projectable production. And I like that type of security there usually, because I'm still building out the core of my roster. And if I take a gamble, it's usually on health over a rookie in that area.
Yep. No, I'm with you 100%. That's my downside. Usually. I probably won't be like, I would have been maybe more intrigued at like the 250 range.
If he stays where he's at, yeah,
we have a huge problem. Like, that's just going to be, that's talking like maybe a third pitcher or another stable starting guy.
That's why I struggle with. That's why I said, like, in 15s, it's tough. Some people are going to be like really in on them and they can hit. I just don't, I think we're spoiled with how good rookies have been that we forget that a 20-year-old can struggle his first taste of the majors. And not even just the majors, but he didn't even see triple A pitching. I think some of those pitching is probably in double A these days anyway, but still, we're talking about a kid here that he's gonna come out and crush the spring training, isn't he? Shoot up boards
and shoot up even higher. Then it's gonna be really out of my pay grade.
Then it's easy. It's easier.
Like I know Cross loves him and wants to have shares at around 150. I think Clegg was a little more timid on the last episode we talked about, but it's going to be a popular thing. People are going to be in on them. There will be somebody. It's like the old joke with most like players you're not in on. Well, it's like, no big deal. Someone else will like him more than me anyways. Like Ellie de la Cruz or stuff like that. Like, people are going to like him enough where it won't even be a problem for you.
If Ellie followed me in the Ellie in the second isn't where I'm doing, but in RDC, he almost he started getting close to falling in the third. And I was like, if he falls me in the third, I'm going to take him. I think he went early third, but still some people like players like that have a price for me. Shurio has a price for me. I just don't know if I'm willing to pay the new price. And that's the problem. Same thing with Kelnick. I think they're both going to get pushed up in a similar area because of team context or what have you. But I don't think either. I'm trying to think of who's going. So I just pulled the DC ADP as well, and I'll just do all of it from the October 1st. And let's go. I'm just curious some names, like say around 150-ish. Like the problem is you have names like Chaz McCormick. Like, I don't know if I want Chaz McCormick over him. Jorge Soler. Soler, that's a skill set thing. Do I want power or speed? So it comes into, obviously, team context will matter. But honestly, looking at these names, I think he belongs there because I don't know how much more do I really. I can tell you right now, I don't think I want McCormick over him. And I love McCormick, but Trio seems more intriguing. Ian Happ, I think I'd rather have Trio. And that's like, so it's like he belongs where he's going, but I just don't know. But like you said, I'm usually looking for other things there. But if he goes up high, like Santander is kind of pushing it for me. I like Santander a little more. Evan Carter, now you're getting to see Langford and Carter going right there, 137, 138. Trio is probably gonna end up right there with those guys because it's gonna become a group of like rookies or whatever. It's gonna be like, hey,
all it takes hot spring training, like you said. Next thing you know, he's going towards 100 probably.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So it's like right now, like I can understand probably going around 150-ish just because I mentioned some names there. And the names I mentioned, it's like, well, now that you think about it, yeah, I guess see Chirio going there. But I don't know if I want to pay the premium that I think. I think we're on the same page here. I'm just rambling because that's what I do. I think we're on the same page in terms of I think we know what the cost is now, but I think the cost is going to be is what we don't want to pay. Exactly. I think it's going to be a little more inflated.
It will be out of my pay grade come draft time.
Maybe I need to grab a share too while it's still affordable. Then
there you go. Maybe this draft now. Go for it with your next pick. Brewers. The last move for the Brewers, they re-signed Wade Miley, the 37-year-old. People get really bored, like whatever. But ADP of almost 490, and all Wade Miley does is keep your ratios down. This is what he does. It's a proven, like he's done it time and time again. 23 starts this last year, 3.14 ERA. He had 8 starts the previous year, 3.16. 28 starts, 3.37. He had a rough 2020, which is a shortened season, then a 3.98, 2.57. His ERAs have been outstanding of in recent years. Whip, a little different. Whip can hurt you. Whip can hurt you good. Doesn't strike out a lot of guys. But if you're looking for some ratio help in the ERA department, he could be your guy super late in drafts.
Exactly. I think Miley's going to be we saw Miley be super serviceable for periods of time last year. I don't see why that's going to change. I was actually trying to look up his I was getting curious about his player rate or fan. I think he was like a $3 player last year, $3.5 player, which considering where he's going, it's actually projecting quite a bit higher. Like a $3.5 player in those that late of a pick is actually a really good quality player, I'd say, for a DC. Because he's not a zero, basically, right? No, but I'm trying. I want to see where he ranked. I can't seem to find it for some reason. I think it's not loading properly for me. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Maybe you can find it. Either way, it was it's one of those things where he also vastly outperformed his underlying metrics. I mean, a low three ERA with like a FIP of 4.69. But at the end of the day, it's built into the price. Everyone knows he overperformed, and he's going back to the same place he did it though. So maybe he can still do it, just not as good. I don't think he's gonna be as productive, but I think Miley's gonna be useful. Especially for periods, he'll be streamable in even 15s. I don't think he'll ever get to that 12 team mixed relevance though.
Well, Wade Miley in just 12 team, the Yahoo format they have on there. Wade Miley was the 203rd overall player, which is pretty dang impressive.
He's going double that,
almost 490 ADP. And if I want to go just by SP. No, that's not what I wanted to do.
This is riveting.
It's what we do here, folks.
I know. Well, I'm curious. I'm just curious because I feel like it goes back to underappreciating these veterans that can put up.
And then he was the 55th starting pitcher with a $3.60 value.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. It's one of those things where I don't think he repeats necessarily that level of production. But you do
half that production to still pay off his ADP.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's like if you're especially like someone like me in one league, I'm doing where I drafted 4 relief pitchers as my starting rotation. Miley is a great fit for that team because I'm going to need some innings because I'm going to need to stream some innings there.
That's just why I wanted to bring him up because people like usually poo-poo Wade Miley. I'm like, yeah, you should probably put some a little more respect on his name when it comes to certain formats. He's definitely – and he's very strong. Viable at times in season, like he's.
That's why I said I think anything. I don't think we see him be that viable in 12s all that often, but anything. I think 15s he'll be more than viable at various times in the season.
For sure, Cleveland Guardians. They made an early trade with San Diego Padres. They acquired Scott Barlow for Aniel De Los Santos, who's a decent reliever as well. But the Barlow one's interesting. You know, once the heralded closer, I believe in Kansas City. And then he got a few saves there with San Diego, pitched well. Now it comes to Cleveland with his 445 ADP. And Cleveland just came out a day or two ago saying they are going to start shopping Emmanuel Clase around. So what kind of interest do you have in a guy like Scott Barlow right now as the Guardians still do have, Trevor Steven and a few others around. But Barlow looks to be the man on deck.
Yeah, I think they went out and isn't Barlow's price a little more costly than they usually pay for people too? Wasn't that a thing?
Yes, he's expensive. We were all surprised by that as well. Yes,
that's right. I'm trying to remember the price. Yeah, so that matters for a team like this, you know, because maybe even if they go, if Barlow isn't great, maybe they want to try to trade him. Maybe they want to try to flip him. So they'll try to build his value. I don't understand why Jose Ramirez took a home team discount to help this team out who doesn't want to help him. That's I feel bad for the guy. Like he took a big discount. And for what, right? But yeah, Barlow feels like the next guy up. it's one of those things where Steven and others can do it. Maybe take a shot on them later if you don't want to pay the Barlow price, especially when Barlow starts rising. If Class A gets dealt, Barlow will be the guy that gets the big bump. And this is just a team that, honestly, I'd rather just let someone else take Barlow and I'll gamble on somebody else I think can maybe steal the job if Barlow struggles.
Yep, 100% with you on that. And then just a minor thing. Like I said, some of these deals won't matter. The Guardians traded Cal Quantrill to the Rockies, T's and P's to Cal Quantrill. But we have nothing to talk about there. Philadelphia Phillies, they re-signed Aaron Nola. I don't have a ton to say there besides Aaron Nola's Aaron Nola. Yeah. Do you have anything to add to that? He went home, so it's all good.
Yeah, I think he's going to rebound. I think last year it was frustrating and maddening to watch, but I think he's better than that. And I think everyone knows he's better than that.
Yep.
So
now it gets fun. The St. Louis Cardinals, some may say the most active team in free agency this year, they went shopping for starting pitchers that maybe passed their prime. I don't know the nice way to say this, but they started with Lance Lynn. They signed Lance Lynn. He has a 284 ADP. Then they went and signed Kyle Gibson, who has a 460 ADP, which is kind of tasty, actually, in these formats. And then the creme de la creme, their new ace in the rotation, they signed Sonny Gray who has a 133 ADP. So now that I said the Lynn, the Gibson, the Gray, obviously makes up, you know, you put Mikolas and Steven Matz with them, and Matz is actually rumored to be shocked as well. How do you foresee these players for fantasy purposes? Gray coming off a great season. Gibson's just been Gibson. Lynn coming off a horrific season. So how do you look at this?
I think Lynn – I don't think Lynn is that bad. I know he had
– I've already drafted him once. So in like three drafts, it's already come. I'm already biting on the price tag.
Well, the thing is he's in your reserve rounds, so you don't have to, like, if he sucks, you leave him there. There's no stress to start him, but decent ballpark, the division outside the Cubs, I don't necessarily have a problem with. And that's assuming the Cubs keep making moves that work, because, you know, they're in on everybody. I'm sure they're gonna land some players. The Reds too. I forgot the Reds now. That's actually a tougher division. I mean, not that the division matters as much. I know you're still playing half your games against your division, but obviously the emphasis is way less than it used to be. I still look at that though, because, you know, it's not just your division. Now you're also most likely pitching in those ballparks, you know, like Milwaukee and Cincinnati. Pirates is good, but you get my point. I guess my point being though, Lynn is, I'm okay with Lynn. I haven't taken him yet, but it's like every time I go, I'm like, man, Lance Lynn can't be that bad, right? But then I said that last year at times, and
dig into his player profile. It's like the strikeouts are still great, but everything else, my God.
Then he had that run. He had that run of a few games with LA,
when he first joined the Dodgers. When he first joined him, like, look at, they fixed him. They fixed him, and then they didn't fix him.
No. They put duct tape on a hole.
The dam is leaking. The bubble gum is coming out of the dam again. Yeah. It is leaking.
But it was one of those things where it feels like, you ever heard of those like scratch and dent appliance stores?
Yeah,
that's what the Cardinals
was shopping. Florida man thing, but yeah.
But so that's the thing. A scratch and dent is like, you go, like, you know, something that comes in, like, it can be brand new, but there's a noticeable dent, ding in it, scratches, so it gets sold for, you know, cheaper just because of that. It feels like they went to that. They went there, like, these guys have their flaws, but we're gonna go ahead and bring them on anyway. And that's what it feels like. That, you know, it's a very much, it's insert your old person joke here, AARP membership of a rotation, whatever. They're gonna have all early games because they have to get to early bird special dinners, whatever you want to say, you know, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I think Kyle Gibson's gonna be Kyle Gibson. I think he's a pitcher these days. You know, he has like a six pitch repertoire and he just kind of pitches. He's a good pitcher. Better real life than fantasy. Lynn, I think, will get there. I think Lynn needs to get away from that cutter up in the zone, because I think it was this cutter that was getting cranked last year. Anything fat, any of his fastballs.
Pretty much anything, was because the thing with Lynn is Lynn's a heavy fastball pitcher.
He's a heavy
cutter, a two before. It's almost all fastballs from Lance Lynn. That's always been the bugaboo, and it finally caught up with him last year. And can he fix that? Is basically what it comes down to.
Can he get away from that? Now, I was looking at his repertoire, and that changeup really stood out to me, but he only threw it 70% of the time, and he only throws it to lefties. So it's one of those things where maybe he needs to get comfortable.
Yeah, he's almost strictly a fastball pitcher.
He needs to get comfortable throwing something else. Or maybe, I think, aren't hitters getting better? I think there was a thing about how high fastballs aren't as effective anymore. So maybe he's the type of guy that, with his repertoire, you can attack east and west instead of north and south. That's a whole different discussion.
And St. Louis, usually, I could be mistaken here.
Well,
they have some smart brains in there to figure some things out, hopefully.
No, I don't know, man. Have you seen the way they've treated their their rotate their lineup?
And, I say maybe it's changed. No, like I knew they used to have pitching guys there. It's likely changed. I'm probably going to sound like an idiot, but
it's okay. But you're not going to mistake
or the last.
So you're not going to mistake Rosario for Kelnick's profile. So that's
no, why. And I, that's why I bring you on the show. I still shine no matter what.
So I set the bar low. Yeah. Hey, bar low.
Bringing it all back.
Oh wow! There's a pun there. There's a pun there. Anyway, I used to back in the day. Anyway. Sonny Gray. I mean, I believe a lot of what we saw last year. I think he's gonna still be just as good. The health is surprising, especially as he's gotten older. But I think he can still give you 150, 160, and that's low end. I feel like Sonny Gray obviously figured out how to stay healthy. I mean, a pitcher, you don't stay healthy on accident. I think routines change. I think players learn their bodies more. There's more data than ever with things. So outside of a fluke shoulder or arm injury, which I guess that's not so much a fluke with an older guy who has a history of it. But I think Sonny Gray will be okay. I'm okay with his price too. He's like an SP3-ish. Yep. And I think it's about fair what to expect SP3, SP4, depending on how you build your teams. I like Sonny Gray. I think he was a good signing for them too, a good team. And I think it's going to work out. I'm not too worried about him. But Lynn is the most intriguing just because I think Lynn is still good somewhere underneath all that. Maybe I'm just wish casting. But the price, I mean, and Gibson's Gibson. You know what you're getting.
Yeah, Gibson's a guy that I still like. Will take at the end of the drafts just because it's like you know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. You know you're going to use him 10 to 15 times a year probably. So you just got to roll with it. I do believe in Lynn, but I'm also ready for disappointment. So I'm with you there. And Sonny Gray is pretty dang good. What he pulled off there now that he gets out of New York and actually used that sweeper that he developed this past year that was phenomenal. And if he can keep building on that, then stand back and I see how that plays out. Detroit Tigers, we've got a couple more to talk about here. Kenta Maeda signed with the Detroit Tigers, which is a bit surprising to me for the fact that 104 innings last year, didn't pitch in 2022, 106 innings in 21, 66 innings in 20. And this is the Detroit Tigers team that has Tarik Skubal, who everyone loves, but innings could be a concern there. Matt Manning, Reese Olson, and Casey Mize coming back from his surgery. So innings are a conundrum in Detroit. And Kenta Maeda doesn't really fill that problem. But I guess all things considered, ADP of around 255. So how do you like Kenta Maeda?
See, I'm in. And I think it's because I buy into what we saw second half last year. The 71 innings in the second half, we saw a 3.79 ERA with underlying metrics that suggest it's pretty legitimate. I mean, depending on what you look at, the Sierra is 3.71, but the XFIP is 3.96. But he's going to a ballpark with a favorable, home run dimensions and all that. So. And it's a team in the Tigers that, like it or not, I think are improving. We saw them kind of do decent last year. And I don't think they need him to go 200 innings. I think they can get 130, 140 out of him, even 150. And if you're giving me a 1.12 whip, like a 20-ish percent K-minus walk rate and a sub-4 ERA, I'm okay with that being my SP6, especially in a 15. In a 12, he's probably a streamer. So I like Maeda a lot. And I think this bumps out Sawyer Gibson Long, but that gives them depth. They also have Jackson Job now, who I don't think comes up right away because maybe that's what this move was to kind of give them a way to kind of wait on Job, maybe not exhaust his rookie eligibility. Maybe they give him a little more run. I mean, he's 21 years old, only pitched a whole six innings in Double A, so I can easily see them. I can see Job coming up. Job's being drafted. I think Job could be more likely to be a end of the year type of call up, assuming that he does well, or unless his team's competing. But I think Job's the type of guy that gets a cup of coffee this year, comes up early next year or right away next year, and is one of those guys that they maybe try to like, hey, look, we have a rookie of the year candidate, and try to get that comp pick. So I think Maeda is a fill gap player with Sawyer Gibson Long now kind of getting the shaft. And Gibson Long will definitely be the next guy up and probably find his way into 100 plus innings just because of basically need there,
The Gibson Long is the big takeaway for me because, it might actually deplete his draft costs because he gets pushed back here. But, ADP of 300, I like just for the fact that those names I mentioned, like Casey Mize coming off his surgery, how much has he really got? Matt Manning can't stay healthy. I love Reese Olson. All these guys have like issues. That's the thing. So, even Maeda, he'll find an IL stint at some point. Like, it's just what he's going to do. So, between it all, Sawyer Gibson Long, I think, is I know, we talk about it a lot. I talk about it here. I talk with Ryan is when you're doing these drafts, who's the sixth man in, all these rotations and which teams have a sixth man that can flourish. Gibson Long could be that dude. He could be one of the better ones in all of baseball when we talk draft price and everything. So I like him a lot, ADP around 300. I think that'll drop as he's gone as low as 357. So I think there's definitely some weight that can drop him even more as news comes out in Detroit.
Oh, and for what it's worth, remember how you talked about the Red Sox dealing maybe Hauk? A report dropped while you were podcasting about how the Red Sox will be, quote, aggressive in search of rotation upgrades. So I don't think they're going to be trading away rotation pieces.
So maybe they're sticking a second base in-house. That'll be or they'll go sign someone else that's out there. Who knows?
Maybe they sign somebody and then like, all right, cool, we'll trade Whitlock or we'll trade Cutter Crawford or
exactly. Powell. I think that's still on the table because I think India is just such a good fit in Boston. But maybe I'm just overexcited about Jonathan India, which is always a scary predicament.
I was last year, and this year the price is like the same, if not cheaper, and I haven't been back in. I think it's because I don't trust him to stay in. If he can't stay in Cincinnati, I don't know if I want him. Unless I'm building for like decent batting average, some speed, that I think he's gonna, you know, it is what it is. I think he'll be okay. I think he'll be a solid piece, but I think it's one of those things where does he go to a team that runs as much? Does he go to a team where he hits as high in the lineup? And does India end up losing too much power production leaving that park? So I think the price makes sense because there's so much apprehension. But if you get half a season in Great America Small Park, that's still probably worth where he's going. And it's one of those things where that's why I draft early, because it gets my brain thinking of all these things. And I start reassessing and I'm like, all right, maybe I'll get on a couple teams. Cause I drafted enough quantity. I think I do a total of 9 between like DCs. I'm going to do 6 this year, I decided, and 3 gladiators. And then my 2 mains. So that's not that's not like a high volume drafter per se, but that's a lot of leagues for most people. So,
yeah. Well, my thing with India is, yeah, Great American Small Park's great, but if he stays in Cincinnati, he's not going to be playing every day. People think he is, but he's not, because there's just so many mouths to feed. Where if he goes to a Boston or somewhere else that needs a second baseman, he plays every day. So is it the quality over quantity question with Jonathan India? What do you prefer? And that's where I think it gets a little interesting, but that'll be something we can decide on a later date and time. All right, we have a couple more here before we have to head on out for the show. The New York Mets have made some noise, and it's not the noise New York Mets fans are hoping for, because when they have a $1 billion owner who has failed in a couple seasons of trying, he's becoming cheap this year, and they've been very vocal about that, and it just happens to be some of the best high-priced people out there to pay for, so it's fun in Queens right now. We'll start with Luis Severino, who signed with the New York Mets on a 1-year deal. Severino has an ADP of around 321 right now. Through 89 innings for the Yankees last year with a 6.65 ERA, through 102 innings in 2022. Obviously, bad 2021 coming off, or a rough after an injury-riddled 2020. All in all, though, Severino's never been really a guy for me. Strikeouts dropped a ton last year. It was a home run derby at most times, but it's always been a home run issue for me with Severino. Some are very optimistic about Severino with the Mets. Some are not. I am not one of them. What are your thoughts on Luis Severino?
I just don't know what to expect. Back-to-back seasons of 89 innings or 102 innings or less. So obviously he's probably not going to pitch a whole lot of innings. And at that, the strikeouts haven't been there the last 2 years either. Injuries played a part. I don't have a whole lot of optimism here, personally. I think everyone's dreaming on the guy that was pitching 190 innings plus back-to-back seasons in New York and, you know, putting up the really strong numbers. And could he get back to somewhat of that? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not. I got nothing here. I want to find reasons for optimism, but it's just hard when there really isn't any.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it. I'm fine. I've said it many times on my shows, and fine being proven wrong. Pitch is great. Congratulations.
Are the Mets known for fixing pitching all of a sudden?
No, they're known for IL stints.
That's what they've always. Yeah, I know they revamped their whole situation there. So. But still, it's one of those things where, like, I can't, like, David Peterson, McGill, those guys never really panned out, even though they both showed flashes. And it's like, this is the same team that's bringing on a guy that has shown flashes and hasn't had it going for the last couple of years. It's a 1-year deal. I think it's a good real life move.
Real life move, because what do you have to lose?
But fantasy wise, I can't see myself buying in. And I'm with you. If I miss out, I miss out. But it's one of those things where it's 2 straight seasons of showing mediocrity or worse and health issues. And I just have a hard time suddenly saying, you know what? And now if he comes out in spring, he's throwing harder. He's looking really good. Sure. I can just like anyone else, I'll adapt my thinking, but right now sitting here in December, I don't see a true path to that guy coming back.
Nope, I'm with you. Like, I'll be proven wrong. That's fine. They also signed utility man Joey Wendell, which, you know, you got McNeil. Amazing. You have Lindor. Like, the infield's pretty much locked in. So this is just super utility guy. I have really no interest in him until someone gets hurt. What about you?
No, even when someone gets hurt, you can keep him. He's what's his face? Guillorme type of guy, where he's just going to kind of fill in as needed.
He was a more expensive Guillorme. That's what one Mets fan on Twitter was very angry about. Like, we could have kept Guillorme for cheaper. What are we doing right now?
Yeah, Wendell was like 2 years ago. Wendell was kind of like a good like utility guy. And then last year for the Marlins, he was so just whatever. And I think his days of playing shortstop are kind of behind him too. So, I mean, he could fill in a pinch, but I don't know. What are they doing? He's a super util. Maybe it was Guillorme a lefty, because maybe not. And with Wendell being a lefty, maybe they prefer the lefty utility guy more.
Lindor's a switch hitter, so maybe for third base.
Well, and they have Beatty for third base and Mauricio, who's a switch hitter. And Mauricio's a switch hitter. So I'm thinking like, I thought maybe the lefty bat was the deal. It was the tiebreaker there. But even then, they don't really necessarily, they have Vientos as righty off the bench. They have plenty of options. They don't need Wendell. I guess Wendell, I don't know. He's still a serviceable utility guy. I'm not saying he's a bad player. Very serviceable. I don't think he. I think it's. I just don't see.
He's probably an upgrade from Guillerme, but not a gigantic upgrade worth doing. This is the thing.
Wasn't that the glove was the thing for Guillerme, whatever his last name was. Yeah. I'm awful.
All right. The last move I have written down here, because really nothing else has taken place, is the Los Angeles Dodgers re-signed Jason Hayward. And that's some may be bummed out about that, but in the grand scheme of things, Jason Hayward has been weirdly serviceable, is what I'll say. He hit .269 last year with 15 homers and 2 steals in 124 games. Like, that's platoon bat worthy. And with the news of Mookie Betts playing every day at second base now, that makes even more sense to bring back Hayward on the cheap, because you have Outman, who should play every day in center field. You have Hayward platooning in right, and you have Chris Taylor or someone else coming into the outfield and left. What's your whole take on this Dodgers thing? I know, like, the Betts second base, you have Hayward in the outfield. How do you see all this playing out? And Hayward, by real quick, before I really give you the floor here, Hayward has an ADP of 687.
I think that's going to go back up now that he re-signed. But even then, it's still going to be reserve round worthy. He'll be a guy that you should be we're in a draft together. I guarantee you we're both going to be targeting him. It's not really a secret, just because he has valuable at bats. I mean, if you get him on a week with 7 righties, he'll probably play 6 of them at least, right? Yep. So you know you're getting playing time there. And we saw how good he was last year. He was kind of, all intents and purposes, back. I mean, best barrel rate of his career. The hard hit rate was whatever. But the fact that he had an 8% barrel rate, which is almost double his best season almost. It's just crazy what they did. They were able to fix him a little bit. I think he pulled the crap out of the ball in the air, too. It was kind of a big thing for him. Anyway, yeah, he pulled the ball really well, elevated it decently. Anyway, so Hayward, I think the problem is, either it's going to suppress the price of Vargas, or it's actually going to hinder the production of Vargas. Because Vargas is kind of like the guy that, like, everyone, because, you know, there's already talking about how Vargas is going to get time in the outfield. And now, that was before. Now they, you know, this report came out about Betts being the second baseman, which only secures Vargas to an outfield spot. So if you get Vargas in a draft, if you assume that he actually, you know, fights and breaks camp, he's going to get outfield eligibility. So keep that in mind. But Vargas is a guy that, I don't understand how I got that so wrong. Like, I really
you
liked
were, you weren't alone. I wasn't I on Vargas. Really there was a lot of very, very smart people that were I
really liked them
in line with you. But like the Bush Vargas thing, they have
and talent. Bush is just never going to play. I don't care if they're showing him at DH right now. I don't at this point. I don't believe them ever. Yeah. I don't believe him. But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, maybe. But I think Vargas would be maybe our Vargas is fighting for a spot. But we've seen how heavy this team likes to platoon. So Vargas being a righty, that could hurt him. But is Chris Taylor really more than a platoon bat? Right now they have Chris Taylor slotted in at left field and roster resource. I don't know if I buy that, because we've seen Taylor, even with opportunities to be a full-time starter, not get that type of run anymore. So I don't know if he would get that shot over Vargas, which Vargas, almost like last year, where they, hey, Vargas, you're the guy. And they gave him that spot from go, and then injury happened and underperformance, et cetera. But could they be like, hey, Vargas, you're the guy again, but you're in the outfield now. And Taylor just fills in as needed. And if he fails in the outfield, then Taylor steps in. So I think Vargas, if I had to bet on anybody losing player time, I think Chris Taylor, honestly, I'd be more likely to fade Taylor than Vargas. But That's my
weird.
Personal
it's opinion. Just weird how they like Taylor so much. That's just always been a thing.
But if you look at it,
last year, and you have Andy, I always call him Pages. I believe it's something else.
Oh, that's what I was looking at too. I was looking at Pages.
He's a talented dude that's just knocking on the door to get a chance to play the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, I think this team's obviously, and then once if they get Ohtani, then that changes a lot of things too, because then Bush is out of the DH spot. I don't think they're done making moves either via trade or I can see Tyler O'Neill ending up here type of thing. You know,
Dave Roberts already said if they don't get Ohtani, they're gonna go after JD Martinez to come back in DH.
Well, maybe, and JD's probably waiting for Ohtani to see where he can go
to see what the market looks like. Obviously, he's not getting $500 million, but at least he has an idea because. Justin Turner and JD Martinez are looking for the same type situation. So, but JD, the Dave Roberts exact quotes was, if we don't sign Ohtani comment, then we will go hard after JD Martinez. So.
Yeah, and that makes sense. But either way, so like Bush goes back to being, unless Bush gets traded, he's kind of the odd man out again for DH. And then that's why I think, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if this team's like, all right, cool, so we don't get Ohtani. Let's go ahead and make some trades, make some moves. This is a perfect team to go out and get a Tyler O'Neill, see what they have out of him. O'Neill would upgrade the outfield defense as well, probably, while also a team like this, it would be the ideal situation for him. Let him start over low pressure because he's coming to a situation where he's not the star, not even one of the bigger names on this team. I think O'Neill could honestly get some run and figure it out with a team like the Dodgers. And I hate to give the Dodgers, I'm sorry for your Giants, but
I'm used to it.
It is what it is, but I think it's a team like, so I think O'Neill gets dealt in the first place.
O'Neill would be great there.
It's one of those things where the Dodgers could use outfield, and this is one of the few, you know what, here's a team that has pitching that they could deal probably. Yep.
They can deal and figure things out.
Sheehan, Stone.
I watched them. Watch them go trade for Jonathan India. And now Betts is back to the outfield after all those reports.
No, India would play first base somehow. Remember, because India is awful defensively too. That's another thing. He's awful. And who's their second baseman? No, Betts. That's right. Yeah. So,
Freddie Freeman's at first. That ain't happening.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like, they can go out there and get Fraley, get another left-handed, because Fraley was actually a plus defender in the corners too.
That'd be interesting. Well, lots more moves to come. One more move that will not take place was announced during the show as we recorded, as the Angels came out and said vehemently that Mike Trout will not be traded this offseason. I still believe things when I see it, but I think it's more that no one was willing to take on the contract that they signed him to, and that's why he was always going to be difficult to trade to begin with. But we'll see what else shakes out here as it's Tuesday of the winter meetings. We still have the rest of the week to go. Everyone's saying Shohei will sign. They're saying all these guys will take place before it's all said and done, but Mr.
Curling, how dare you just not talk about the lead, bury the lead. I tweeted out before this podcast about how the Rockies are focused on pitching help and bench upgrades, as if their starting lineup isn't a bunch of bench players. They want to upgrade the bench though. Don't worry,
I don't care about anything
the Rockies do. I just thought I'd mention like that's what they're focused on: pitching help and bench upgrades.
That's why a lot of things said at the winter meetings take with a grain of salt. Like, would I be shocked if Trout's traded tomorrow? Probably not, but I also would be shocked if he traded, period. I think it's just too difficult to trade a player like Mike Trout. That's just gonna be very, very, very complicated to pull off. But any final thoughts, Mr. Curlin, as we keep plodding on here in the off season to get ready for 2024?
No, that's it. Just gonna be churning out content left and right. Got some stuff in the works as always, but I'm definitely scaling back and focusing more on being a player this year. As long as you, obviously, I have no problem being your co-host in season or whenever you need me in the off season, because I love talking baseball. I gotta get better again, man. I can't be making these rookie mistakes, you know.
But we'll have you back as usual. I kind of sprinkle in other people here and there, but I will have you back for sure. And the end season content will likely stay the same as long as the schedules line up. So we will see where things go, but make sure you follow Mike on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. MLBplayingtime.com is where you can get all the information there. He admitted to me before the show he's horrible at marketing, so I'll take care of it for him.
Well, also, what are the odds it lasts more than a year? Let's be honest.
Oh, I'm, but I'm, you're giving it longer than I thought. No, I'm
just kidding. Well, I paid for a year, so it gets a year.
So it'll be up. It'll be active for a year. Content-wise, up to debate, but it'll be active for a year.
Yes.
You can find me on Twitter at BDEntrick, my Substack. Just search KC Bubba on the Substack or follow my Twitter. It's right there. So check all that stuff out. But until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 614, recapping some of the MLB hot stove with Mike Curlin. Catch y'all later.